You're listening to The Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
Good evening and welcome to The Lyric Feature for the final episode in our award-winning series Feather and Flock, in which the ecologist Anya Murray and the folk musician Brian McGlynn turn their gaze skyward and fix their attention on our wild birds. This week they're going to the top of the food chain and taking the pulse of a species reintroduced to Ireland in the last 20 years after an absence of almost 100. This is Feather and Flock, Eagle.
Welcome to the final episode of Feather and Flock, all about eagles. My name is Anya Murray, and as an ecologist and a writer, I'm intrigued by how wild creatures have come to be as they are, how they live and interact with their environment, and our ever-evolving relationship with other non-human beings. In making this series, it's been a privilege to meet and interview some of the people at the forefront of nature conservation across Ireland and listen as they share some incredible insights and experiences with us. In this episode, we've been exploring the most majestic apex predators of the bird world, eagles.
I'm Brian McGlynn. I'm a musician, singer and songwriter, mostly with my band Ye Vagabonds. I've always been fascinated by the stories and folklore associated with wild birds here in Ireland. All the ways that birds and people's lives have intertwined, and the extent to which birds have influenced traditional music. Through conversations with poets, folklorists, musicians, writers, and musicologists, it's become clear that people have always had a great depth of understanding of all the birds that we share a home with, along with all of their individual quirks and behaviours. Eagles are a perfect example of how certain birds' folk narratives can change over time, and how these associations can reflect our changing cultural attitudes to nature. Inspired by the discoveries that Anya and I have made as we collected material for these programmes, I have curated and performed new and old music for each episode with a host of musical collaborators, including songs written especially for the series.
For thousands of years, both golden eagles and white-tailed sea eagles were widespread across Ireland. People in the Mesolithic period, generally referred to as hunter-gatherers, held birds of prey such as owls, falcons, and eagles in high esteem. There's evidence to suggest that these people ate eagles, even though they would have been difficult to catch and unpleasant tasting. The likely explanation is that, in an animistic worldview, consuming the flesh of such powerful animals would help convey their characteristics to those who ate them. The eyesight of the owl, for example, the speed of the falcon, and the hunting prowess of the eagle. Throughout our history, people respected and even revered eagles as a symbol of great wisdom and power. Having seen them in person, this makes perfect sense.
The Irish word for eagle is uller, often anglicised in place names as owler, uller, or iller. Based on a study of place names containing the word uller, it's been estimated that the population of golden eagles in Ireland in pre-medieval times was well over 500 pairs, and white-tailed sea eagles were even more abundant. But attitudes to the wild changed dramatically since early medieval times. With colonialism came the impetus to tame and control wild nature, to subdue both landscape and people in order to make way for colonial landlords and their new approaches to profiting from the land. Eradicating large and powerful predators such as wolves and eagles was a major part of this endeavor. If these symbolic wild warriors could be eliminated from the landscape, so too the rebellious nature of the people here. By the 18th and 19th centuries, eagles were perceived as an unwelcome enemy. The advent of the breech-loading shotgun then made their eradication possible.
In a concerted effort to exterminate them, wild eagles were shot and poisoned across the country. Their nests, too, were pillaged and destroyed. Records suggest that the last pairs survived up until about 1910 in remote places such as West Kerry, North West Mayo, and Glenveagh in Donegal. So for over 100 years, there were no wild eagles in Ireland, until the turn of this century, when a reintroduction programme began, run by the National Parks and Wildlife Service in collaboration with the Golden Eagle Trust. Now, eagles are back, flying high over Irish mountains, valleys and coastlines. Each summer, a dozen or so eagle chicks were collected from the wild in Norway, with the assistance of the Norwegian conservation authorities, and brought to Killarney National Park. Once transported and minded carefully for a few weeks as they acclimatised to the new setting, the chicks were released. Within weeks, these fledgling eagles went exploring, the first white-tailed eagles to fly through Irish skies in almost 100 years. Brian and I travelled down to Glengariff in West Cork to see where the first Irish-born white-tailed sea eagle in over 100 years had fledged from. High up in a tall tree at the edge of Garanish Island, overlooking Bantry Bay, is an enormous eagle's nest. There also happens to be an old Martello tower nearby, so with a pair of binoculars, it's possible to look out through the treetops and peer right over to the nest. A rare and privileged view into the lives of this pair of white-tailed eagles and this year's chick. We met with Claire Herdman, conservation ranger with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, who's been keeping a close eye on this particular family of eagles since they settled on the Beara Peninsula.
So the white-tailed eagle, yeah, it's our largest bird of prey. They have a wingspan of kind of on average about 2.2 metres, but the female can have a wingspan up to 2.45 metres, so that's like 8 foot, so they're huge. I mean, one of the nicknames is the flying barn door, so yeah, they're really massive.
Oh, wow, look, oh my gosh.
See that flying across there?
Oh my goodness, so kind of brown on top, and you can see the white tail.
Yeah, so you can see the white tail, and you can see, actually, I can see, because I'm looking through the binoculars, it has an orange tag, so I know that one is the male. He's was satellite tagged, so we know where he travelled, where he was until he set up home here. But yeah, that's the male. So we're hoping he's out hunting for fish. And you can see he's heading out into Bantry Bay there.
Do they feed exclusively on fish?
They don't feed exclusively on fish, but it's definitely one of their favourite foods here. Actually, surprisingly, dogfish. So they're probably also getting discards from possibly fishing boats. So we had some quite interesting scenes where the dogfish brought it, because they've got such tough skin, still alive in the nest.
You're kidding me.
I tried the male sitting there, what's going on, this thing is alive, and getting a bit freaked out. But so fish, yeah, is a big part of the diet, but they will also take seabirds. So again, we've seen this nest site that we've had things like cormorants and shags and other seabirds like auks being brought in, so they are opportunists. But we know this pair, you know, what we call a fully maritime pair. They're nesting on an island. They've got the sea all around them, where some of our pairs are nesting kind of on lakes, a little bit more inland.
Oh, yeah, I can see the tail and the 12.
You
He's giving us a great show.
God, he really is. He's posing there now for us at the stage.
So all the birds that came in from Norway all have a white tag on one of the wings, and then for each year there's a different colour on the other wing. So the female here has a black tag on one wing, so we know she's a bird from 2011 that was brought in from Norway as a chick as part of the reintroduction programme.
So she would have been born in Norway and brought in and released in Killarney National Park, and here she is 10 years later breeding on Garnish Island.
Yeah, and the male, he's really interesting because he's actually a wild-bred bird. She originally had a different mate, a male, who disappeared. So this is a young bird from 2018 who hatched from a nest in County Kerry. So he was actually the first Irish-bred male to fledge his own young. So last year was his first successful attempt at breeding. So, they had a chick last year, a male, who's... Yeah, I think he's off in County Kerry at the moment. There's always this story, oh, they pair for life. And, you know, we have had a couple of losses here over the years, like of birds that disappeared, and we don't know what happened to them. But one year, when this female first arrived, she actually had a nest about 5 kilometres away, way down the valley up there behind us. She had a nest there, and the original female was in a nest here. And I was trying to work out who the male was, who her partner was. And I was there one day, and it was the same. The male had two nests.
He had two females in two separate nests nearby.
And both of them had laid eggs, and he's there going between the two. But unfortunately, once the far nest hatched, he kind of, I suppose, the instinct with a live chick was there, he abandoned this nest and left. And then the subsequent year, the female that's here, she kicked the original female out. She's a really big female. The original female was quite small, and she basically ousted that female.
And stayed in the nest with the partner of the original female.
Yeah, so she switched from the far nest back here with him.
Oh, so you could make a soap opera over the love lives of these white-tailed eagles.
Yeah, and unless they had these wing tags on or the satellite ties, you wouldn't know because they all kind of more or less look the same. Although they do have really different characters. Like, she's quite assertive. She definitely... I didn't say the female's actually quite a bit bigger than the male's. So, like, an adult female could be around about 6 kilograms, whereas an adult male might be 4 kilograms. So when you see them perched together, the female is really distinctively bigger.
And when the chicks fledge, I know they're fed for a while, but are they then booted out of the territory of the parents?
Yeah, we're not quite sure exactly how that process happens. Yeah, I think they just get that urge to travel. And you see them sometimes, they kind of take a day trip off and then come back, and then maybe a couple of days and then come back. But you see the parents starting to kind of lose patience with them because the chicks can get quite aggressive. Like, when the adults have got food, they'll be, like, trying to get it off the parents. So I think after a while, the parents have just had enough.
Because they had a webcam streaming the goings-on in the nest, Claire was even able to tell us about some of the quite particular behaviour of a chick behaving badly.
So there was definitely quite a lot of politics, like the male and the adults were trying to sort of build the nest up a bit, and the chick would come in and literally like having tantrums, like pulling sticks out of the nest again, because we still had the camera on the nest. It was really funny, yeah, I just got to see it. And it took a while, because for a while the female, I suppose she was still trying to protect the chick, so at times she was like booting the male out. And then we knew the final sort of turning point was when the two adults teamed up and booted the chick out, and we thought, yeah, finally they've kind of decided which way this is going to go. You know, you could see there the male flying out had like an orange tag on one wing, green on the other. So that means we can identify the birds visually, like with the binoculars, but also a lot of them have a satellite tag fitted. So the young that have hatched in this nest over the years have all had satellite tags fitted, so we can follow their movements.
I've looked up some of the maps of where they go, and they disperse right up to kind of Mayo and Donegal, and then they come back again, don't they?
Even further, like we've had ones go as far as Scotland, across to England, to the Isle of Man, come back. Some of them really make quite long journeys. Others are home birds, so we've had some that never leave Cork and Kerry. You know, they might fledge from a Cork and Kerry nest and they just don't want to go anywhere.
And of the 12 breeding pairs that we have at the moment, where are they in Ireland?
Well, they are starting to spread. So we're down in County Cork. We've got pairs in Kerry, Clare, Tipperary, Galway, and now in Donegal for the first time. So they are gradually spreading.
And they're all coastal, except for the ones on Loch Derg and Mount Shannon?
Yeah. There's two pairs on Loch Derg. Yeah, so all the rest are more or less coastal, yeah.
Are there any specific benefits to the ecosystem due to reintroducing these eagles?
Well, they're apex predators, and what's interesting about that is because Ireland has had a paucity of birds of prey. They think things like hooded crows and ravens, and even possibly magpies, have sort of taken the niche of those. So by having apex predators, you kind of put things more in balance. And there's some kind of research that shows where you do have eagles, you can get a reduction in those corvids, which are actually possibly more likely to attack a newborn lamb. I remember one time I was watching an eagle up a mountain and it landed on a rock quite close to a sheep. The sheep just turned around and chased it off. So, you know, a healthy ewe will see off an eagle. Have you heard of kleptoparasitism? It's where one animal steals the food of another animal. So you'll see it sometimes, the white-tailed eagles will do it with otters. So you have an otter that catches a fish, and then the white-tailed eagle will come down, scare off the otter and take the fish that the otter has caught. But grey crows can do it with eagles. So the eagle might be feeding on something on the ground. So the grey crow, one of them is behind pecking its tail, distracting it, and then the other one nips round and gets like a bite of the food. So there's all sorts of interesting strategies in the wildlife world in times of getting your dinner.
And what is the attitude in Glengariff? Because obviously these birds are only here for, 10 years. Are people delighted that they're here? Are some people resentful of their presence?
I mean, generally people seem to be really happy with them here. I think there's always that kind of fear of something new. So I think when the eagles were very first brought into Ireland that first year in 2007, there was a bit of kind of opposition, you know, farmers that were worried they might take their lambs and things. But what we found here on the Barra Peninsula, you know, since the eagles have settled and established territories, people have realised that, you know, that they're not taking all their lambs, you know. So I think once people have got used to them, and there's a lovely kind of sense of pride that they've chosen to nest here. And people get used to seeing me around. And so if I'm watching a nest, you know, I might be with the telescope set up like this. And, you know, if it's a landowner or a farmer going by, they'll be, oh, how are the eagles doing? Any chicks this year? You know, so I think people, generally interested and, realise that they haven't posed a threat to their livestock.
It's heartening to hear about the eagles and how well they're settling in since the start of the reintroduction programme, and that people are so excited about their return too. But there are challenges. Occasionally, young birds collide with wind turbines and are killed that way. And others are poisoned, perhaps intentionally, perhaps accidentally.
Over the last few months, we've had two definitely poisoned. We had two others picked up in Northern Ireland just, again, about 10 days ago, suspected poisoning, but we don't know yet. What happens if we do pick up a dead bird? It gets x-rayed, then it goes to post-mortem, then toxicology, so we get all the information in to find out the cause of death.
How does the poisoning happen? Is that accidental or intentional, do you know?
We don't know. I mean, we think for the most part it's probably not intentional, not targeted at the eagles. It's possibly targeted at something else, like possibly foxes. But, you know, it's illegal to lay out poison meat bait, whatever it is. And one of the poisons being used is actually completely illegal as well. Carbapenem is completely legal. It's been legal since 2009. But the problem is if you put out poison, it's indiscriminate. So it can poison anything. It can poison your dog, can poison a bird of prey. It could poison, say, a fox, and then a bird of prey feeds on the fox, so you can just get this sort of chain of poisoning. Yeah, so that's really sad to see some poisoning still happening. And it's an absolute tiny minority, but of course, eagles are flying up high and covering long distances, so it only takes one or two people to be laying poison bait, and it can have really drastic consequences.
Before we had to run off to catch the boat back to the mainland, we took one last close look at the eagles through Claire's telescope.
So you can see he's got a really pale head.
Yeah.
And actually also his beak is yellow. So the chicks would be darker brown and their bill would also be dark. So you can see the really pale head on that male.
Oh, look, he's colored.
That sound is really distinctive. And when they're courting, they'll do like a duet. So the male and female will sit together on a branch and just do, like we saw there, you know, they put the head up, open the beak and they do that very distinctive call. So it's lovely to see when they're courting.
Strong beak, though, the size of it. It's so chunky and yellow and the downward hook of it.
And the talons, we can't see the talons on that bird, but they're absolutely massive.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for taking us out.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we better leg it for the boat.
Watching these birds fly around Bantry Bay, I was left wondering whether the landscape might hold on to any memory of them, in a country where the hills and crags still bear their name. Perhaps the eagles can sense where they once hunted and nested, and from their higher perspective, I wondered how the land might have changed. I wondered how it might change in another 100 years too. With all of this in mind, I wrote and recorded this next song with my friend and bandmate Alan McFadden. This is called Up From Where You Are.
Cascade silhouette, quick past the window. First light, yellow air, blue ice in the shadows. Steps crack the clear bog, rusty cans clatter. Ash cry, hazy sky, the hares dash for cover. Remembering the way now. Remembering the way now. Up from where you are, can you see where we're going? Following the winter sun over the horizon. Crisscross, weave in the willow. Fine thread strung again, flying west to follow. Remembering the names now. Remembering the names now. Up from where you are, can you see where we're going? Following the winter sun over the horizon.
Folklore can play an important role in the viability of reintroduction programs with wild predators like eagles and wolves. Even though most of us in Ireland would never have seen an eagle or a wolf, or know much about their behavior, deeply ingrained ideas passed down through folk tales like the Big Bad Wolf leave strong impressions on our psyche. Eagles are poised, strong, graceful, and powerful birds. So it's easy to see how they could be associated with warriors, powerful leaders, gods, and even the other world. But for some reason, eagles mostly appear in fearful stories in Ireland. In order to uncover some of the folk beliefs we hold around eagles in Ireland, I met with Neil McCutcher, a folklorist and author who's written several books on the connections between folklore, mythology, and nature, including a book on the folklore of Irish birds. I began by asking Neil how eagles usually appear in Irish folk tales.
Well, there's this very persistent myth that eagles would snatch babies and fly off with them. And so there's various versions of the story, not just in Ireland, but in Scotland and other places as well. And There's one story told about Achill Island. The woman had her little toddler, well, just a baby crawling on the ground, and the eagle snatched it up and flew off to Clare Island with it. So she gathers up some fishermen desperately, and they row across the Clew Bay to the island, and they see the eagle's nest, and they climb down. It's on a cliff, so they climb down the cliff and rescue the baby. But in all of these stories, it's interesting. The baby is always completely unharmed and completely happy to be there. It's almost as if the eagle has stolen the baby to raise it as one of its own rather than as prey. And what's interesting is you also find stories about... There's a story about King Alfred, who heard a baby crying in an eagle's nest and took the baby out and raised this young baby who grew up to be a fierce warrior. So there's some sort of notion of eagles rearing warriors or something, rather than actually just taking them for prey. But I think that gets lost sometimes in the popular narrative, and there'd be scary stories about back in the day about the eagles would steal your babies, and people taking these things seriously, you know?
It seems to me that these baby-snatching stories served a particular purpose in Ireland. To legitimise the removal of these powerful wild animals from our landscape and to assert dominance over nature at a time when land use was changing in Ireland and prioritising sheep. I was curious to know if Neil thought these stories had persisted in Irish folklore and if he thought they might hamper efforts to reintroduce eagles in Ireland.
There has been some resistance among certain members of the community to these birds. And do you think that maybe some of that resistance comes back down to maybe deeply ingrained fears and beliefs like these ones?
Yes, I think so. Maybe not about babies. I'd say that idea has died out. But certainly about lambs, there's a very strong idea that eagles would take lambs. But it's extremely rare if it ever has happened. And white-tailed eagles, of course, hunt fish, so they've no interest in lambs or anything like that. So the golden eagles aren't really interested. They mainly catch other birds, and they're catching them up in the wing, or they're catching rabbits or something, they're swooping down. They're not really interested in lambs because they're easier prey. But I think you do have to address these concerns and speak to people and get them on board so that these things can be successful. And there were a spate of poisonings with these introductions, so hopefully that will die out as people become more used to them.
Going even further back in time, I was curious to know if there were many references to eagles in Irish mythology.
In mythology, they wouldn't have made any distinction really between a golden eagle and a white-tailed eagle. They're both fairly majestic, noble birds anyway, so it was very much a symbol of kingship and authority, not just in Ireland, but across Europe. You know, the Roman emperors had the eagle as their symbol. Whenever they held a funeral for an emperor, they'd have a caged eagle and they'd release the eagle as a sort of symbol of the emperor's soul heading up into heaven. So it was just associated with a royal regal bird, and it was associated with the sun. And we don't have direct evidence for eagle being associated with gods that way in Ireland. It just hasn't survived. But it has generally been regarded as this sort of very important bird. Like, there's one story, Tuan MacCarroll was supposed to be this kind of poet or shaman figure who took various forms. He took the form of a salmon and an eagle and a boar, and he lived for many hundreds of years. So there's this idea of the eagle maybe being sort of a magical creature associated with shamanism or something like that with poetry. So again, it's the idea of the sky and connection between this world and the other world and something otherworldly about it.
I've been lucky enough to witness these majestic birds in action, and I can only hope that more of us will once again be awestruck by them too, and that these old myths will soon be replaced by new associations with these incredible masters of the sky. Fadhan Ullr is considered a very ancient Irish tune associated with the O'Donovan clan who lived by the River Maeg in County Limerick over 1,000 years ago. Despite the fact that this tune would have also been played as a march and set to a different rhythm, it's more commonly known as a kind of lullaby. The legend goes that this was a tune that the eagles would whistle to their young in order to send them to sleep in the eyrie. While the tune is widespread in Ireland today, to my knowledge, the words have been lost from the tradition. So I thought it fitting to rewrite some lyrics for this as a lullaby in both Irish and English, with the tune played by my friend Leisha Kelly, the great harper from Achill Island. As autumn came in, Anya and I travelled to Glenveagh National Park in northwest Donegal, where the first few golden eagles were released in 2001 by the Golden Eagle Trust, working with the National Parks and Wildlife Service. There we met with one of the early proponents of the reintroductions, Lorcan O'Toole of the Golden Eagle Trust. While we were told that the chances of seeing an eagle today were slim, Lorcan, Anya and I made our way deep into the glen, right into the heart of the Golden Eagle's territory.
They're most majestic when they're on the wing. I like seeing them in particular when they're not even flapping, when they're soaring and gliding. They're very adept at finding the thermals that are rising up, invisible, and you're saying, well, how is that bird lifting up without flapping? It's just sitting on a thermal going up. And it'll also glide on the updrafts. If you can think about it, it's a very calm day today, but if it was a windy day, the wind will be hitting the side of that mountain and going over it, causing an updraft, and the eagles can actually glide over that as well. And sometimes they'll soar, circle on one thermal, and they'll glide and drop and then find another thermal and lift up.
Do they do that for fun?
I think it's actually, they perceive that it's often to save energy. But the eagles do like these ridge lines because they're spending less energy as they wander between foraging areas. So they're scanning a big area, but they're not flapping as much.
Mid-interview, I was glancing up towards the ridge of the mountain, and just above the upper scree slopes, I caught a glimpse of a broad, soaring silhouette with rounded tips on its outstretched wings. Sure enough, it was not one, but two golden eagles.
It's moved off that way.
Well spotted, Brian! And what's that, a raven or an eagle, do we know? Oh, look, you can actually see the golden tips on the wings.
Yeah, it's not a young one, is it? It's a white on it.
It's got the rounded wing tips that you were describing. Yeah. Well, and it's soaring just as you were describing.
It's not even flapping, is it?
No. This whole time trailing it with binoculars and it's not flapped its wings once. And even at that distance, it just looks so majestic. Here, do you want to get a proper...
And the second one went behind
ID.
You.
So that's a pair of golden eagles there we're looking at. So it's still gliding now in the near side of the ridge.
There's a second one.
There's one down below. So would they hunt in pairs?
No. But they'd stay in touch.
We can see the two of them now. They're very close.
Mutual soaring, just on the skyline.
They really are huge, aren't they? Just looking at them through binoculars like this, I'd be used to looking at, even Wicklow, so I'm used to seeing red kites and buzzards and things, but there's definitely a bit of a size difference, just even as they kind of glided over the top of the mountain. They cast a bigger shadow.
Oh, they're just so stunning.
They're very comfortable there, aren't they?
Yeah.
In flight.
That's a bit of telescope there.
This is like synchronized flying, like those synchronized swimmers. Seriously?
Yes, it is, yeah, they're well coordinated.
There's no aggression there between them.
A mating pair then?
Yeah.
And they stay together in the territory through the winter months?
Yes, Can you see this? I think the one on the left is slightly larger with my eyesight, the one below now. If you see them close together, the female should be slightly bigger.
That's looking at the synchronized way. Look, they're flying around in circles together. They're kind of looping in and out of each other's flight path. It's just gorgeous to see.
Once the eagles disappeared over the ridge and off into the distance, we were curious to know more about the landscape and the changes that led to the extinction of eagles here.
And it's all pretty mountainous and rocky and scree slopes. There's not much pasture or farmland up this way.
In the past, I think in the 19th century, early 20th century, there were one or two fields and paddocks, as you can see behind, that would have had sheep and cattle. Donegal was famous in the 1860s for sheep wars, and there was various stories connected to the National Park regarding sheep and whether locals were taking sheep from the laird at the time. It probably led to some of the evictions here in Glenveagh in the 1860s. Prior to that, I think people were running more hardy upland cattle prior to the sheep, but the sheep became very valuable in the mid-19th century because of the wool industry. So in parts of Donegal and maybe in large parts of Scotland, some of the tenant farmers were evicted to make way for bigger sheep ranges or economies or enterprises, shall we say.
Given how prominent eagles would have been here, I asked Lorcan if he knew any local stories about eagles from the past.
So some of the stories vary. One of the local stories here is the Sweeney clan were the only ones who were allowed to wear an eagle feather. Some of the Sweeneys nearby in Glendone knew where the eagles nested in Glenveigh, and they approached the eyrie when the chicks were still small, and they tethered one of the chicks. They just put a leather thong around its talon to one of the stronger or bigger branches in the base of the nest, and they withdrew, and the parents fed those chicks for the fledging period, which could be anything up to 10 weeks. Then they came back, and the poor chick was... One chick had fledged, flew away, and the second chick was able to fly, but was tied to the base of the nest. And they took that chick in a Hessian sack over to Falcarra, and they gave it to the local landlord as a part payment of rent. And he kept it as a falconry, kind of a display bird in the front lawn of the big house. The chills, they knew where the nest sites were. They didn't go in and just kill the birds. The stories during the Great Famine that people in Mayo may have visited eagle nests to remove rabbits or hares from the nest when food was so scarce.
So they were kind of stealing the prey from the eagles,
yes,
for themselves?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. I've been to several nests, more so in Scotland, where you would see five or six rabbits on the, freshly killed rabbits on the edge of a eagle nest.
I was curious to hear if there'd been any knock-on effects on smaller predators like crows and foxes now that this apex predator had returned to our skies.
Where the eagles are, some of the hill farmers have said to us they actually like to see the eagles because they're losing less newborn lambs to particularly crow attack. And equally then, we have seen from some of the nest sites we visited, golden eagles can take fox cubs. They can take crows, they can take ravens, and they can and have taken badger cubs as well. So that the lower predator will fill the gap if a larger predator is removed. And you'll probably see that with other falcons. For example, buzzards, I think where there are buzzards or goshawk, you're going to have less magpies and hooded crows as well.
And is here in Glenveigh the first place that the golden eagles were reintroduced?
Yes, they were only released here. So we released 63 birds between 2001 and 2012.
When you brought the first birds over from Scotland, how did you get them here? What did you do with them when you arrived?
The birds were collected from the nest in the Scottish nest sites. You know, that was a slow process where you'd have to put them into a bag and lower them down on an abseil rope. And then obviously they were fed in Scotland for a day or two before the veterinary checks were done. And you were collecting a few birds together, and you could only maybe collect one bird, possibly two in a day. So you were trying to come back with five or six birds together. But the birds settled in relatively quickly, and they were young and mostly healthy birds that we brought over, and they were given plenty of food. So you could almost sense within 48 hours they were well settled, and you could see by their behaviour.
And you were bringing food up to the cages for the first few weeks?
Well, constantly until they left the cages. We were replicating the adult, feeding them at the nest site.
What kind of food were you bringing for them?
It was a variety of crows, rabbits and venison. So venison come from the red deer, and we had crows, and we also had rabbits that were brought in from different parts of the county.
How many of those birds that were brought in like 20 years ago are still going, and how many of them bred successfully?
Well, funnily enough, there was concern, and I think there were one or two people betting that the six birds we brought in 2001, what we released in August, would all be dead by Christmas. At least three of those birds lived the full lifespan of between 18 and 19 years. We had our first egg laid in 2005, and two eggs laid in 2006. They did not hatch, what often happens with young pairs. But in 2007, we had a single chick fledge here in Glenveigh National Park. And since then, we've had 23 golden eagles fledge from nests in Donegal.
Amazing. What's the population now then, do you know?
We think the population is probably between about 28 and 36 birds. Some birds may be wandering outside of Donegal. We know for a fact there is territorial activity in the Sperrin Mountains. There's some activity over in the Antrim Glens. We have had birds go down to Leitrim, Mayo and Galway. And some of our birds have actually gone back to Scotland as well. There has been golden eagle activity, or an individual at least, moving around the Wicklow Mountains and the Cumras and Kerry in the last 2 years. So I think in time, the Golden Eagles will be able to occupy other counties where they were formerly.
And at this stage now, it's just up to the birds to spread and settle where they will. There's no more intervention from people.
It's debatable. Some people say, why don't you bring in more birds? Personally, I feel we should be looking at the habitat, trying to improve the habitat rather than releasing more birds.
What would habitat improvement look like?
I think there'd be more upland woodland, there'd be more upland scrub. There'd be areas with less large-scale, uncontrolled fires every number of years.
Why did you want to reintroduce an extinct species back, Golden Eagle? Like, 100 years, they were gone. What kind of a notion was this to bring them back and re-establish them in the Irish landscape?
I think it's trying to recognise the true vitality of the Irish landscape. If people are trying to plant an oak woodland in an area that hasn't had oak trees for 200 or 300 years, it's the same type of question. I think people are very comfortable with planting trees in an area where they're lost. But over time, I was a bird watcher, I suppose I had been working in Scotland. The Irish Raptor Study Group was set up and we had the lowest range of bird of prey species of any European country. 6 breeding bird of prey species compared to, say, Britain with 18 at the time. It was just extraordinary.
6 raptors are known to have become extinct in Ireland in the last 300 years. The golden eagle, white-tailed eagle, osprey, red kite, marsh harrier and goshawk. 4 of these have now been successfully reintroduced, so we can only hope for their continued success in years to come.
It's early days yet for golden eagles and white-tailed sea eagles in Ireland. They're managing to find their way in the landscape, and each year new nesting territories are being established. But there are still many challenges. Persecution remains a threat, as eagles, along with other birds of prey, are regularly killed by illegally laid poisons. Barn owls, hen harriers and even kestrels are not doing well in Ireland, each of these being red listed as species of conservation concern here. As well as cases of illegal persecution, most raptors struggle with a dearth of healthy habitats, especially in Ireland's mountainous areas. Uplands are grazed bare by a combination of sheep and invasive deer, chomping away at the layers of plant life that are necessary to sustain a diversity and abundance of invertebrates, upon which healthy populations of small birds and mammals depend. And these, in turn, are what support top predators such as eagles, harriers, and kestrels. These birds are hardy, but they aren't ever going to be able to thrive without enough food. Ireland's native birds of prey are so much a part of our heritage and are key indicators of the health of our ecosystems. That so many are still struggling tells us that we have much to do to restore healthy habitats across the landscape. But witnessing the first generation of Irish-born eagles in over 100 years has been, for me, one of the most moving wildlife encounters I've ever had. And I can't help but feel hopeful after experiencing the thrill of seeing enormous eagles soaring high over Bantry Bay and the mountains of Glenveagh. As well as being crucial for restoring the ecological balance in many Irish ecosystems, there's a hugely symbolic merit to these reintroductions. We are gradually shifting our perspective. Wild no longer has such negative connotations, and so we are welcoming back wild creatures and recognising the need for more concerted action for wild nature. A few years ago, one freshly fledged female white-tailed eagle flew from Cork all the way to the site where the last breeding pair
lived in County Mayo in 1909, as though paying homage to the last of her kind here. These pioneering eagles carry the hopes for the future of so many of their wild kin across Ireland.
For years now, I've found it difficult to explore nature in Ireland without being focused on the damaged landscape all around me. But just this morning, as I walked along a track in the Wicklow uplands, I noticed a change in my perspective. My eyes were raised to the sky in search of a great soaring shadow above the mountain ridge. I'm no longer doubtful of the future vitality of nature. I'm actually deeply hopeful, watching for the return of the eagle. That ecological recovery isn't just a possibility, but is an inevitable future for us.
Feather and Flock, Eagle was presented by the ecologist Anya Murray and the folk musician Brian McGlynn. The programme was produced by Anya Murray and the sound mix was by Brian McGlynn. The opening and closing theme of that programme was Winter Sun, written and performed by Brian McGlynn on guitar and synth. Up From Where You Are was written, produced and performed by Brian McGlynn and Alan McFadden on guitar, mandolin and synths. The traditional tune Fad an Uller was played by harper Leisha Kelly, with lyrics written by Brian McGlynn, Alan McFadden and Aoife Ní Glynn, sung and produced by Brian. All other music and score in this episode was written, arranged and produced by Brian on guitar, mandolin, fiddle and synths. The pieces included in this episode were called Thermals, Mutual Soaring and The First to Fledge, as well as the series score for Feather and Flock and the Root and Branch theme. Soundscapes and bird songs were recorded in the field by Brian and Sean Renane of Irish Wildlife Sounds.
You're listening to the Lyric Feature on RTE Lyric FM.
The series Feather and Flock is this year's winner of the Gold Award for Best Factual Series at the IMRO Irish Radio Awards, and all six episodes of the series are now available to listen to by podcast from the RTE radio player, from the Lyric FM website, or wherever you get your podcasts. The programmes were made with funding from the RTE Independent Radio Productions Unit and from Cumasúin na mBan's Sound and Vision Broadcasting Funding Scheme, all paid for by your television licence fee. The Lyric Feature series producer is Owen O'Kelly and the production coordinator is Michael O'Kane. On next week's programme, we're changing tack completely when actor Sharon McArdle and playwright Declan Gorman set out to create a theatre piece based on diaries kept by revolutionary and writer Dorothy McArdle during her incarceration at the time of the Irish Civil War. That's Dorothy's Prison Notebooks on the Lyric Feature next Sunday at 6 p.m.